We are now going to talk to Tony Gosling. He's been on the show before, been on the radio station many times before. He's an investigative radio journalist who reflects the concerns of ordinary people rather than the attempting to lead opinion or sensationalise things, as some members of the press are certainly want to do. I'm absolutely delighted to welcome Tony back to the show. Thank you for joining us, Tony.
Hi, Bill.
Well, what a time to talk to you. We're going to start with the poisoning in Salisbury, of course, an area you know very well.
Yeah, I worked for the BBC in Salisbury. They've got a little office just by the Arts Centre. I don't know if they still have. That's where we hang out. We're the news producer. And we used to do something every day, which was a couple of hours Salisbury opt-out. So it was just for people in that part of Wiltshire. I don't think the BBC do that anymore. And Wiltshire Sound has gone. It's now called BBC Wiltshire, very imaginatively. But I mean, all I'd say about Salisbury is it's a deceptive city because it's absolutely surrounded by military all over the place, including what was supposed to be secret, I don't think it is anymore, underground nuclear weapons store at Chilmark, which was the quarry which was originally used to get the stone to build the cathedral hundreds of years ago.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's just that they're everywhere, including the headquarters of UK Land Warfare at Wilton, just down the road. And, I mean, that whole area is, of course, we've got Salisbury Plain, where all the training for the British Army and other parts of the military goes on. So people don't realise, you know, you could easily visit it as a tourist.
Yeah.
And think, oh, what a sleepy little town. But it is military everywhere around there.
Well, I have to tell you, I went for an interview, an audition, a live radio audition in that very office that you were discussing there. For the BBC once. I think I saw your coffee cup still left in there. It wasn't washed up, by the way, Tony.
Yeah, and probably some copies of my old tapes, things that we used to do there. That's just in the old days of reel-to-reel.
Absolutely.
I mean, on a more serious note, there's been some amazing changes in the way this story's been being presented to the public. And, I mean, it was just literally a couple of weeks afterwards I really decided, after this first incident happened, to do something on the record about just what I thought of it.
Yeah.
And that's on YouTube now. It says something, I think it's called something like 20 Reasons Why the Salisbury Nerve Agent Story is Fake News, because I think there's so many holes in this story. The most recent one is we were told that the policeman that was poisoned with this deadly nerve agent caught it or was touched it somehow when he first approached the couple on the bench at the Maltings. And now we're being told, no, that didn't happen. It was because everyone was poisoned by the door handle at the house, which the policeman apparently never went to. So now they're saying that they reckon that that there was some sort of residue from the house that was taken to the restaurant, to the pub, before there was any kind of ill effects from this deadly nerve agent. And also, of course, this stuff really is deadly. A little drop of it on your skin will kill you. And yet nobody's died. Everyone now seems to be getting better and is fine. Now, this either could be miracles worked by the NHS, or it could be that this is some kind of concocted story.
Let me ask you about Novichok itself. It's, I believe, what's called a binary agent, which requires two chemicals to be mixed together in a very specific chemical equation, basically. It's not the easiest thing to make happen, but, of course, it makes it easier to transport. The door you mentioned there, I've got a couple of questions, and I was interested to hear your thoughts on this. If the Novichok was mixed together by whoever it may have been and put on the door, isn't that a little risky that the first person who comes to the door might be the postman?
Of course it is. And so this is another reason why this would not be a method that any kind of proper professional such as the Russian Secret Service would use. I mean, this is an incredible idea that if let's just, as a thought experiment, let's just imagine that Vladimir Putin started banging his fist on the table, this guy, I want to kill him, just before the election, even though, of course, there doesn't seem to be really any motive for that. But if he did, would his team that he sent covertly to Salisbury, would they fail to kill all of these people, or were both of the people targeted, or the one person targeted? It's just it would be a totally unprofessional and botched operation, and it certainly wouldn't be the sort of thing that a state would be involved in. It was really interesting, actually, to hear Gary Aitkenhead, the boss of Porton Down,
yes,
talking about this last week. We're, of course, just completely undermining everything that Boris Johnson said about it, this chemical definitely coming from Russia.
Yep.
But he also said something else. He said that this is almost certainly, or I think he used the word probably, a state actor.
Yeah.
Now, that is just nonsense. If you talk to any of the biochemists, they'll tell you that this chemical, Novichok, can actually be made by any organic chemist in a laboratory, and it was designed as something which didn't need to have specialist equipment that was only available to states to do it. So any pesticide factory that makes organophosphate pesticides could make this product. At least that's what the organic chemists are saying. The only thing is, none of this is being reported. So there's a whole dearth of reporting on this story. And that's what makes me so suspicious about it. I mean, we're in the situation, as you hinted at earlier, another potential illegal invasion. I mean, we've had the United Nations Security Council this week discussing the possible chemical weapons attack in Douma, and the potential that there might be an attack by the United States. Donald Trump has threatened this. We're seeing the French and the British also lining up for a possible attack on Syria. Of course, that would be, just like Iraq, illegal, and like Iraq, potentially a faked weapons of mass destruction story. So the parallels with 2003, 15 years ago, are pretty shocking.
They are. We'll talk about, we'll go on to that in a moment, because I've got a few questions on that. But let me ask you a couple of questions. If Theresa May insists is true, that there are no other plausible explanations that the poisoning was done by Russia, I would ask a couple of questions. Why, in that case, if they believed that Russia were the only people that could make it, would they use a poison that could easily be traced back to them, if that were the case? And my biggest question, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, Tony, is what would the Russians have to gain?
Well, again, there's nothing. The Russians would not have anything to gain. This guy, by the way, Sergei Skripal, he's, if you think about how dangerous he is to the Russian state, certainly when he first came to the UK, he would be dangerous because he would have all sorts of intimate knowledge of what the Russian secret services were up to. Yeah. But hang on, we're talking about a decade afterwards. He's really not going to have any knowledge now which is of any real value to the British. So why would the Russians now think about trying to get rid of him? I just don't think that's plausible. But what knowledge he would have is of the British Secret Service. It's quite clear he's been working closely with Pablo Miller, who was the guy that recruited him for MI6, and also with this guy, Christopher Steele, who put together the dodgy dossier on Donald Trump, all to do with the rather strange behaviour of Trump with prostitutes, which was just released at the time of the presidential election. So I would suggest that actually Skripal is much more valuable to the Russians, and that there is an article which says that he actually wanted to go back to Russia, not permanently, but he wanted to go back and visit friends and stuff. And he'd actually written to Putin saying, look, I know I've been involved in this spy swap, but I'd like to come back and see some of my relatives. He's obviously getting a bit homesick. And I don't think that the British Secret Service would have really been too pleased about that. So there is definitely a motive for the British to, shall we say, make it impossible for him to return in one way or another. Now, whether that means that it certainly is a motive for the Brits to say, look, we can't allow this guy to go back because he knows far too much about Christopher Steele's dossier, about this privatised company, which is made up of ex-MI6 people, effectively a kind of privatised secret service, Orbis Business Intelligence. And we certainly don't want him going back to Russia and telling all the secrets about how this dodgy dossier in the Trump election was prepared.
And of course, we then have the perplexing question of his daughter, Yulia, who is out now. And actually, only the Russians have allowed us to hear her actual voice. And she's saying some very odd things this morning, isn't she?
Yes, she's, I mean, she is, I think it looks to me as if she's somehow been intimidated or bribed, which of course is what, this is the stock in trade of the MI6 and these secret services. What they do is they try and play on people's ego. They, obviously there's money to bribe people. They try and get, you know, get them on their ideology to go from one side to another. But the shocking thing about the released phone call was that last week we had the actual voice recording of her talking to Victoria Skripal, saying basically, look, they're not going to give you a visa to come. And of course, that was announced at the weekend that they will, just I think just after the weekend, that they were, that she wasn't going to get a visa. The most shocking thing to me was that in that phone call, which in the Western press was presented as, oh, we can't verify this phone call. Okay. Well, the next day they announced that, oh, well, actually, Sergei Skripal is recovering and it looks like he's going to make a full recovery too. Mm. But that was talked about in the discussion that the Russians released with Yulia. Mm. So I think what's going on here is it's news management, disaster management. And this story is being managed by the British establishment day by day. And I go back to this thing about whereabouts was the poison? Was it actually, and where did the policeman get ill? Was it by the bench in the Maltings, or was it back at the house? Because he apparently didn't go to the house. And so they've got a real problem with this story falling apart.
Mm. Theresa May, in all of this, has received almost widespread praise for a handling of this ever stranger thing. And I guess you could even go so far as to say that it's revived her fortunes as Prime Minister. And it's quite an easy call, isn't it? I mean, the iniquities of Russia today are something that most Conservative MPs, or most MPs full stop, could agree on.
Well, I'm not so sure about that. I think that there is a... listen, the big difference with 15 years ago and the illegal invasion of Iraq is not the WMD. It's not the fact that the United Nations Security Council would not pass any resolution. It's much more to do with the fact that this is... Russia is on the other end of this, and they're absolutely on top of this situation in Russia. So they're saying, if you decide you want to attack Syria, we will sink your ships and we will shoot your planes out of the sky that attack. So they're being absolutely clear. You haven't got this through the Security Council. We're not having another illegal war, another illegal invasion. They're also in a situation in the US where they have an agreement. Apparently, they're all trying to get rid of ISIS in Syria. Isn't that what they're trying to do? Not not Assad?
Mm.
Well, actually, what they do is every time they do an airstrike of some sort, a missile strike, they wire through first the GPS coordinates of where they're going to strike to the Russians. And that's how this cooperation has worked and how this civil war, if you can call it that, which actually it's more of a proxy war, I think, with the Turks being involved in funding and helping, and NATO being involved in funding and helping ISIS and al-Nusra, these so-called rebels, I would call terrorists. The BBC never does, but that's down to them. So, I mean, this may not happen. I mean, what I've heard is that maybe we're going to see some strikes by Trump at the weekend. And if they don't tell the Russians beforehand, this is simply going to happen. The Russians will take down American jets, and they will if those missiles come from ships, those ships will hit the bottom of the Mediterranean. Pretty quick.
Yes, I mean, Trump, of course, his tweets are beyond belief. Get ready, Russia, because they will be coming nice and new and smart, referring to his weapons. Talk about kind of telegraphing your intention.
Well, and also, I mean, we've heard, I don't know if you've seen these reports from the Lebanese media, that they have actually captured what they believe to be British special forces in Douma, which is this area of eastern Ghouta where this chemical weapons attack is supposed to have taken place. So that will be interesting to see over the next few days or weeks if those people do turn out to be... I mean, we've got this whole situation with the people like the SAS, the British Special Forces, American Special Forces, the Green Berets. they are totally outside any kind of democratic control, these special forces. So it, when you look at the parliamentary committees, the Defence Select Committee, people like that, these special forces can be deployed by the government, that is to say by the Prime Minister and by the Defence Secretary and by the Foreign Secretary, and nobody else needs to know about it. So it's quite feasible that these special forces have been in some way involved in this chemical weapons attack. And I'm not saying that they've done it, but they may know who's done it. They may have actually helped to get some sort of chemical weapons to the centre. But what we've heard from the Russians on the ground is they've had their people in there, and they've said that we can find no trace whatsoever of any chemical weapons being used in that area. So it's not impossible that this footage that we've seen on the TV has been somehow faked somewhere else. And it's good to see, actually, that the BBC have, when they've been showing this footage, at least along the bottom of the screen, saying, you know, this is unverified footage. Because, you know, the thing is, when you see children in that situation, it looks like that they, you know, they're very, very ill, very sick, dying, crying, this sort of thing. This actually hits us, doesn't it? Mm. Hits us very hard. And what we don't see is we don't see the children who've been hit so hard over in Gaza, for example, over in Palestine. We just don't see pictures of the way that the kids over there have been so horrendously affected by the apartheid wall, by the starvation, all this kind of thing. So I think what we're witnessing here is the use of, potentially anyway, of psychological warfare techniques. Not only, I mean, these techniques are designed to be used against enemy powers, but it seems to me that they're also being used now against the domestic population. One of the most fascinating things I've seen, and Ian Fraser, a friend of mine, he's a financial journalist for this Glasgow Herald, he's retweeted something which I found absolutely fascinating on Twitter, which is a guy called Riam Dalati, who's a BBC Syria producer, who has retweeted some fascinating pictures, and he said, or actually no, he tweeted it himself, he said, pro-rebel activists appear to have staged a last hug photo. It went viral, claiming to show young victims of the Douma gas attack in their last embrace. Victims can be clearly seen on two separate floors in the aftermath footage, placed in position at the collection identification point. So what he's saying is that this is staged. And he's also tweeted that he's fed up with kids being used for these staged attacks. Now what's happened is that tweet was deleted and his account has been protected. So nobody can go back and even see that the tweet's been deleted anymore. No. But thankfully, people have kept copies of this BBC producer's tweet. I mean, I think what's happening here is that there is an attempt to fake this attack. And what we've seen is a very quick cover-up operation by the BBC there to shut this guy down and to say, well, look, if you want to keep your job, you better delete that tweet and you better do this and you better do that and protect the account.
There was another tweet, Tony, allegedly from the Russian Defence Ministry, and that was a month ago, which said the RUMOD has reliable information that insurgents are going to stage the use of chemical weapons by the government troops against civilians in some areas of the eastern Ghouta. There are people there to simulate victims of a chemical incident.
Correct. So the Russians said this was going to happen. It did happen. And this is the Russian Ministry of Defense. So certainly the Russians themselves were prepared for this. They expected it. They told the world. The only thing is, it wasn't reported. Now, I'm talking about the British Special Forces that are being reported as being found in this area where this chemical weapons attack allegedly took place. Look, if we're doing our jobs as journalists, we don't necessarily have to say, well, we believe this is true. We don't have to report it as fact, but we should be reporting what these foreign news agencies are saying. At least, and they haven't been doing that. So this is what the sort of thing that I think is a very sure sign that what we're doing, what was happening here, is a very strong attempt at news management. So certain potential aspects to a story, whether it's the Skripal story in Salisbury or whether it's the chemical weapons attack alleged last weekend on the outskirts of Damascus, there are large aspects of the story that's simply not being reported. And that, I think, is the real worry. I think the BBC particularly, you know, they've done a reasonable job. But Sky, it seems to me, have been the ones who have been at the forefront of reporting the lies. I would just say some of this appears to be lies. And they've been reporting that as fact. Now, do you know what that makes them?
Go on.
That makes them conspiracy theorists.
Indeed.
One of the most important jobs as a journalist is to sort out the fact from the speculation and present it as fact and present it as speculation. And they simply haven't been doing that, Bill.
And as we finish here, Tony, Trump tweets, "Our relationship with Russia is worse now than it has ever been, and that includes the Cold War." What do you actually think may happen next? Because we are dealing now with, we're not dealing with a nutter in North Korea who's just a bit bonkers. We're dealing here, we're poking a superpower.
Okay, well, Trump is no President Kennedy. Hmm. So when there was the Cuban Missile Crisis in 1962, which was a pretty hairy, and it was a real serious, you know, nose-to-nose confrontation between the Soviet Union and the United States, we had President Kennedy in charge. And, of course, within a year, he was, I think it's just about within a year anyway, a year later, he was assassinated by a combination of the FBI, the CIA, and Lyndon Johnson. And I'm not just saying that. The evidence is pretty clear that they got the Chicago Mafia down to Dallas to assassinate him. It was a Chicago Mafia hitman, James Files, has confessed to it. And, in fact, that's in the Express and the Daily Mail and places like that have reported that more recently. Mm-hmm. But look, the problem here is that, Trump, as also is, I mean, the brilliant article I would thoroughly recommend everyone to read about Trump. It's by William Engdahl called "The Mafia Don with a Pompadour," and it shows Trump's long, long connection with the mafia. What happened at the weekend, I think, is also really significant. That is to say, the raiding of Trump's lawyer.
Yeah.
So what will be in front of the deep state now in the United States, that is to say the FBI, etc., who I think are totally out of control, is a whole dossier of Trump's sexual liaisons and monies paid, possibly and probably even to Russian prostitutes, etc. So this is now, I think, potentially being used to blackmail Trump on this Syria issue. You know, so this is another aspect which I haven't heard reported. These two stories, I think, go very closely together. Trump is just about to make one of the most important decisions a US president has ever made.
Yep.
And suddenly, a few days before, leaked to his enemies is all his most personal private information. Now, doesn't that strike you as an interesting coincidence?
Absolutely. Tony, as always, it's been really good to talk to you. You certainly say it as it is. And, it's information, isn't it? We need to get information out there, don't we?
I do a show every Friday. You can find it online at thisweek.org.uk. I'm not trying to rob your listeners, but I'm saying there is a lot of, actually interesting stuff out there. If people, the thing is, nowadays, you're not going to be spoon-fed it.
Yeah.
Ever since the BBC was nobbled in 1987 by Victor Rothschild, who helped to get rid of the Director General at the time, Alistair Milne, whose son is now Jeremy Corbyn's Director of Communications, you know, you're not going to be told the truth. You have to go out and look for it yourself, I'm afraid.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, sir. Much appreciated. Tony Gosling.
Cheers,
all righty. Take care. Bye-bye.